This podcast is brought to you in association with SellerAmp, sourcing analysis simplified.
Welcome, welcome back to the Goodbye Poor, Hello Rich show. Yeah, we are still here in the studio. Big, big thanks to Aura Elite Media. I thoroughly recommend it if you're in the Sussex area. There's a podcast studio here that is untapped, I'm telling you. Right, let's get into this show. Thank you to our sponsors, SellerAmp SaaS. Continues to support the show, continues to support me. Al was a speaker at the roadshow a couple of weeks back and he nailed it. Such a lovely guy, so generous, and we are proud to be sponsored by SellerAmp SaaS. This week, we are back with the guests. This is a banger. This is a banger. We're talking to Ryan. Ryan is the Amazon FBA investor. I can't really talk about Ryan without playing the interview, but what a lovely guy. I had seen this guy come up on my TikTok feed more and more and more in recent months, mostly talking about stocks and shares. He had He had a hat. He had a MAGA hat on. But yeah, make investing great again. I love that. He's got a big beard. Really good dude. Really good guy. I reached out to him and asked him to be on the podcast. We had a chat. He runs a podcast himself, which we're going to get into because he specializes in private label. Whoa, 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 whoa. If you're an Amazon FBA person on retail and online arb, that doesn't mean that you switch off now, because Ryan built his way up to private label on retail and online arb. And this guy has got online arb stories that will blow your socks off, especially during COVID. The guy's a machine, right? There's no denying why this guy's successful. I'm looking at this other chair in this room as if he's going to come in. He's not. This is a Zoom call, this one. So we're going to flip to the Zoom call. But the first half, we're going to get into how Ryan got started. Here's a spoiler. It was used books and all of the usual things that I did to get started. And we're going to talk about how he has then built out his private label product. I'll let him get into it. It's a hell of a story. He's a hell of a guy. When we do road shows, he's coming on. Yes, you are. Ryan, if you're watching, you're coming on, mate. Let's get into it, shall we? Roll up. Ryan, lovely to have you on the show, mate. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. It's a pleasure being here. You know, and this is, I think, the second podcast I've ever been on. So no. I'd like to do this more and more. And yeah, it's a good podcast to be on. So I've seen you about on the TikTok. So yeah, pleasure to be here.
Mate, I'll take that. Right, it's all downhill from here. That's the hard bit. Right, talk us through your journey, because I can relate to your journey so much. We sort of similarly started pretty much flipping books and RA. So talk us through how you found Amazon as a business model in the first place and where it's taking you, because it's taking you to the bleeding moon, isn't it?
So yeah, this story, okay, if we look all the way back to the beginning, it starts in 2019. And I was actually working. So my career has primarily been when I was working in investment banking and management consultancy. And I was working at Morgan Stanley. I was working with some of the traders over there, kind of trade support, front office stuff. And there was a guy I worked with, the Slavkin guy, and he was like, "Have you heard about Amazon FBA? It's a really cool thing. I know you're into your entrepreneurship." Because at the time, funny enough, I'm going to keep kind of throwing things back and then coming forward. So timelines are a bit all over the place. But he knew I was kind of into making money outside of my job, because at the time I was doing match betting. So I don't know if you're familiar with match betting.
I am. Again, another thing, mate. Another thing that I know a bit about. So it's all good.
Yeah, yeah. So I was doing match betting, and you know, go ahead. I'm not going to bore you with the ins and outs of that, but it's a cool tool if you're looking to get into the making money outside of your job space. So go and Google it. It's completely legit, good stuff.
Absolutely.
So I was doing that, and I took it a bit a step further. So I was doing match betting, and then I was also doing something called sports betting or arbitrage. So I was arbitraging the odds of horses. So it's a little bit complicated, but in a nutshell, what I was doing is I was betting very large amounts on a horse to win, primarily the favorite. And then what I'd do is I'd use websites like Betfair or Smarkets to lay that bet, which essentially is betting on the complete opposite. So either the horse not failing to finish, or the horse losing.
Yeah.
So basically I was covering all my angles, and there was a way you could do it using the match betting calculator, where you basically offset everything, and whichever way happens, whether the horse wins, doesn't finish, or loses, you guarantee and lock in a set profit. So I was doing that on pretty big scale. So managed to hit around six figures doing that, low six figures, over a period of about 18 months.
That's match betting on steroids, isn't it? That's amazing.
Yeah. Effectively, yeah. That was pretty crazy. Very risky. There were definitely days where I lost a few grand, but over the long term, it was net positive, which was great.
Yeah.
So we knew I was doing that, and I kind of told him about that, and he was like, "I want to do that, but it's a bit risky, mate, to be honest. I'm not really, my risk appetite isn't as big as yours." And I was like, fair enough. And he came to me one day and he was like, look, Amazon FBA, super cool. The way he described it to me was, hey, you head out to charity stores, you find books, used books, you get them using software like, what was the software I was using at the time? It wasn't even Keeper. It was like Profit Junkie or something like that. It was some really skew with software back in 2019. And he was like, look, if it looks good and it sells a couple of times a month, you can package it up, send it into Amazon. They'll store it for you. And then when you get a sale, they'll ship it to the customer and deal with all your returns. And I was like, hey, that sounds too good to be true. That's a bit out of my street, that is.
Yeah.
Right. So the very same weekend, I set up my seller account and I literally hit the road and I literally just killed all the charity shops in my area and afar. And the funny thing is, the friend who told me about it, literally, he actually got started about 9 months after me. So he hadn't even got started yet. But I'm someone where if you tell me something and you tell me you can make money from it and, you know, you vouch for it, even if you haven't started it, I'll just jump headfirst into it.
Wow. Mate, I love it. Honestly, I was working my day job. This would have been back in 2017, something like that. And my mate, who was a bit of a hustler here, there and everywhere,
yeah,
he literally said to me, he went, have you heard of Alibaba? And I went, no. He went, get on Alibaba. So I'm on my work computer, I'm a civil servant, I'm on my work computer. I type in Alibaba. He went, look, you can buy, what was it at the time? It was something stupid, like a fire poker for like, yeah, you can buy it for a dollar. And then look what it sells for. And that was the only conversation I'd ever had about Amazon. And here I am. Well, I started 5 years later. 5 years later, mate. You know, when you see crossroads in your life, in retrospect,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do.
That was it, yeah. No, yeah. Fantastic.
So amazing. So you jumped straight in and you started doing used books. Did you have good success with those?
So I made about $5,000 profit selling used books. They were a bit hit and miss though, because I didn't know how, I couldn't really read the charts. I didn't really know about Keeper then because right. I didn't know anyone else was doing it. Like, I mean, I'll just jump into things and just trial and error. Yeah. So I bought a lot of books that were duds and just didn't sell. Ended up sitting at Amazon. You know, the storage fees add up and then you're like, look, I need to recall this. End up disposing it or trying to plug it on bloody eBay or car boots or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I made about $5,000. But I quickly found using that method that this is going to be a bit of a slog.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do this forever, to be honest, because I got tired. There was only so many hours in the day. I was driving to obscure, you know, towns in the home counties, trying to find these books in these charity stores. You know, you go into a charity store and it was like, sometimes you get like, I don't know, you come out with like 100 quid's worth of profit. Yeah. Other times you go in there, there's like no non-fiction books. Do you know what I mean? It's all just fiction. It's all trash. And like, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So I
go
nipped it in the bud.
Scanning.
You still do it. Yeah. It's the treasure hunt, isn't it? It's the thrill and the chase.
That's it.
So did that for a few months and I nipped it in the bud. And then, because I always knew about retail arbitrage, going in stores and, you know, going to clearance aisles and getting items in. I knew that was cool. But then, there's something about it, whether it was the fear of getting like IP infringements, trademarks, the fact that I didn't know anyone who was doing it. Maybe it was kind of, I liken it to kind of guys that are doing retail arbitrage, online arbitrage, even wholesale now, and kind of looking at private label, because there was definitely that kind of that barrier to it, mm-hmm. where it was like, okay, I know this is kind of where I want to go, but I don't know, it just looks a bit risky. It's not for me. So I kind of felt that going from charity store books to retail arbitrage. And I made the jump anyway, because I was like, I can't do this forever. Got into that and that was amazing. The jump in the revenue that you can generate profit-wise and just the turnover and the volume was, I mean, I was hooked on it because I've got an addictive personality. So if I see something, especially when it comes to making money, if I see something that makes money and I can, you know, I can go into this store and all these people, these, you know, members of public walking past all this gold and treasures on the shelves, I couldn't believe it. So that was great. And then just doing that, I mean, I've got some crazy stories. I'll fire some off if you want to hear them.
Go on, man. Yeah, love it. Was this pre-COVID or are we at COVID at this point?
This is pre-COVID.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Go on. Hit
pre-COVID. Yeah. So this is 2019. So one of the craziest stories is there was and you might remember this. I'm not sure. You weren't doing Amazon in 2019.
I started 2022.
You weren't. Okay. So you won't remember. Well, you might know of this product. So it was a board game. It was a test match cricket board game. And it was pretty much exclusively available in Smiths. And by the time, you know, I'd caught on to it, I'd pretty much bought them all out in London, you know, going around because I was working Canary Wharf at the time. I drove my car down there. I drove to Charlton, all surrounding areas in South London and around Canary Wharf. Got all the units. Now, I noticed there were about 60 units how much were they? There were about 35 units that were in Scotland. So they had them in the Aberdeen store. They were in Falkirk. I think there were a few in Edinburgh. And I was on the phone to like Smiths and I was like, look, guys, you've got to transfer them down to the London store so I can get these. And they were like, we don't do store transfers. Like, you have to come in and get it. So I was like, how am I going to wrangle this? So what I ended up doing was I booked a flight for me and my missus. We flew into Aberdeen, got a rental car, and I literally drove around. Mate, it gets better. I drove around to all the stores and literally cleared all the shelves in Smith's, But then I realized I'm in Scotland. I haven't got my printer. I haven't got any of my cardboard boxes. No packing equipment, anything. So luckily I'd packed with me my trusty tape gun, and I had the, this is before I had a label gun. So I had the, you know, the sheets of the kind of 27 labels per sheet, per A4 sheet. So I had that on me. So I don't know how I did it. And I had the two, for the carton labels, I had the two sticky notes per A4 sheet as well. So I somehow bribed the hotel staff to print that out for me using the label sheets, using their kind of laser jet printer. And I drove to Asda, and this is one of my tricks from back in the day. I'd go to the crisp bar, get the crisps from up top, get that big cardboard box down, stack the shelves with the crisps, and steal or procure the cardboard box. And that was how I packed those items. I got 33 of them in the end, packed them up and shipped them off. Dropped them to a UPS drop-off point. It was absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. So I bought them all for £12.50. And the last few units, I sold them at various price points, always getting like sort of 200%, 300%. But the last 5 or 10, I think, I sold for £130 because I was the only one in the country with them.
Wow. Yeah, of course. They were exclusive to Smiths, and Smiths had sold out. Bloody hell.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that whole trip, after paying for flights, hotel, car rental, trip to Edinburgh Castle and all that, I think I netted about £5,000 profit, which was incredible.
That is incredible. That is incredible. And what a game as well. What a game that was.
Before that,
it was Brian Lara's cricket before that. And
That's it.
Pulled a string. What a game.
That's it.
Good times. Wow, that's amazing. So when did you decide? Did you know you were getting into this? When I started with mine, right, I thought to myself, right, I had £200 to my name, and I thought, right, I'm going to just turn that over on books and ARP, build up, then I'll get into wholesale, and then when I get that, I'll get into private label. Mate, I was so naive. Yeah. You just kind of feel like, oh, scaling up just means changing my model. You know what I mean? It was
It was ridiculous.
and of course, it didn't work out that way at all in the end. But you did dabble in all of them, didn't you, before you landed on it?
I did, yeah. So I did retail arbitrage for a long time. And then I did wholesale. I dipped my foot in wholesale. I didn't really do full-scale wholesale. I wasn't phoning brands and procuring exclusive deals with people. What I was doing was I found a toy wholesaler and I was ordering, you know, much more units than I would do in retail arbitrage. So I kind of say I did wholesale, but I didn't really do wholesale.
I wonder how much of that wholesale is really, because they call wholesale different to brand exclusivity. And I'm thinking, no, because then all you're really doing is online arbitrage just at volume. That's all it is.
You're just buying more units. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I did a little bit of like extended retail arbitrage, online arbitrage, if you want to call it that. I was doing the whole online arbitrage for a bit after retail arbitrage. I had two VAs actually getting deals in deal sheets and going down all that route. But to be honest, to cut a long story short, what I found was, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners can kind of relate to this, is the fact that I was selling, reselling, whatever method you want to call it, online arbitrage, retail arbitrage, wholesale, I was reselling other people's goods, and listings were just getting tanked. There were like a million people on the listing. You know, what looked good by the time I looked at it, by the time I actually sent units into Amazon, you know, you get 10 off, but then you're like, this isn't a good listing anymore, but you've got units at Amazon. So what do? You know, you weigh it out for them to sell out of stock, or, you know, you dip your price down and potentially break even or take a loss. And it just happened too many times.
By then, I'd
got used to using Keeper as well. So I kind of knew a bit more about what I was doing. But it was like, I didn't like the lack of control really got to me. I like being a bit more, I know Amazon's like, they can shut you down, they can shut your account down. But I just wanted a bit more control. And I just felt like, I don't like the way this is going.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And that was back in sort of 2019, getting into 2020. So,
wow.
You know, and I hear horror stories now about, you know, it's got a lot worse, and people are getting into doing unique bundles and things like that, which I don't know anything about. But it seems like the game's kind of, it's evolving a little bit compared to kind of what it was in 2019.
Yeah, that's it. We went down that road in the end. We went down the unique bundle. And again, if somebody said to me, can you define a beginner's arbitrage journey to an advanced journey? The difference is the beginners jump on other people's listings. The advanced, you own the listing and people jump on yours. You know what I mean?
That's it.
That's the seesaw, isn't it? But we...
That's it.
I ended up learning everything there was to learn about private label, but I still haven't launched a product. I had three products that I knew were good. I had I differentiated with them, and we'll get into all this.
Yeah.
Everything ticked all the boxes, but then I've got shiny object syndrome with this TikTok affiliate thing, and we've ended up going down that rabbit hole. So private label is something that I believe in. I think I'm so sure that it is something that I could set up and I'd be good at.
Yes.
I still haven't been able to pull the trigger though, mate, but the subject fascinates me. How did you get into it?
So I got into private label. My story is quite unique, actually, I feel, anyway. So 2019 going into 2020, the pandemic hits you know, it's March 2020 now, it's pandemic, it's everyone's mandatory work from home. You know, everyone's at home twiddling their thumbs, you know, what can I do in my spare time kind of thing. And I just saw like craziness around me. Like people were buying gym equipment, you couldn't get it. It was going through the roof.
Yeah.
I was still doing retail arbitrage at the time. Like what I was doing was, this is where I really blew up the retail side, going into like Boots. And you know, at the time, I think hairdressers were closed, so you couldn't go to hairdressers. What I was doing was, and it sounds quite bad, but I was making a lot of money. It was basically price gouging. I was going into like Boots and getting the L'Oreal Root touch-up sprays, the little turquoise bottles.
This is
at this time, you couldn't send units into Amazon FBA, so it was purely FBM. I was getting these little bottles for £6, and they're buying them £6, and I was selling them for £40. But I literally picked it up. I remember I was in Sainsbury's at the time, my mate, because we found one product, we were absolutely killing it on that, so we went to get more from the clearance aisle. I don't know what, I just ended up down the hairdresser and I'll just scan this item, and it had a BSR of 3. And I was like, wow, that means this pings off by every 3 seconds. Yeah. It's had a BSR of 3. So I was like, you know, let me just be cheeky. There was no offers on it. BSR of 3, no offers. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, let me just be cheeky and see, you know, £50, can't miss it. 40, 45, can't miss it. So £40 worked, went through. By the time I'd taken the item from the aisle to the till, sold. I was like, damn, hang on a minute. I've got a magic machine here. So I went back and got another one. I was like, maybe it was a fluke. Hit it again, and it sold. Literally, before I got to the till, I was like, hang on a minute, I'm onto something here. So then I just literally started picking up more and more items in the kind of hair dyeing and hair colorants kind of section. And I realized there are basically loads of them that were just pinging off. So then from that point on, for that whole month, I just made it my mission just to absolutely cane on those products. All FBM. I mean, me and my missus were packaging, I remember at the time, 400 FBM items a day.
Really?
It was ridiculous. Yeah, it was nuts.
That's where the graft is on FBM, isn't it?
That was it, yeah. That was it. The post office were sick of us. We come with sacks like Santa. They'd be like, not you guys again.
I used to do that. I used to tell people, don't sleep on FBM, especially at Christmas time.
Yeah.
When if your lead time's going in and are savage on FBA at Christmas time, you could find something in Tesco. And I would say this as a hypothetical, it could sell before you hit the till. I've never known anyone that actually done it in real life.
Twice. Well, imagine BSR of 3 and there's no offers on it. You're the only offer.
Wow. Yeah, you've got to monopolize the market, man. That's unbelievable.
That's it. Good, touching on the Christmas time as well, we did not to the same effect where it didn't sell as quickly, but we had a similar thing with advent calendars. It would have been, I think, Christmas time around the pandemic, so people still being at home. Mm-hmm. And advent calendars, again, just absolutely going nuts. You know, when you refresh a seller up and you've like sold 5 and you refresh it again, there's another like 3 gone. It's like, what the hell? It just feels too good to be true.
Yeah. Right, that's amazing. So why the hell did you get into private label again?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Do you know what? That once the kind of pandemic kind of got, everyone was kind of going back in, I dabbled in private label. My first private label was, pandemic, we're killing it on retail stuff, but I know this is going to come to an end eventually when, you know, everything's open again. You know, I won't be able to sell this for £40 because there's going to be a wholesaler or a retailer that's going to sell it for bloody £6, as it should be. Or even Amazon. Amazon are going to sell it for £6 because that's what price it is.
Yeah. Right.
So I knew it was going to last forever. So I was like, look, okay, with these funds, I think that April 2019, we did, I think, £50,000 revenue at a crazy profit margin because we were just gouging the market. It was like 60% profit. It was nuts. So we had a lot of money and I was like, look, I want to get into private label. And it was COVID time. So I was like, let me sell my first ever private label product. I've never told anyone this, was the COVID thermometers. So those little thermometers that you used to point at your head and scan you for the temperature, I sold them as private label. So that was my first ever product.
That's a great show.
Yeah.
Did you modify it at all? Is it just a white label?
So that one, literally white label. I even used the same pictures from Alibaba. Like, again, stepping into this is what I always do, is try and error, get burned quickly, then figure out what the hell you're doing. So I stepped into it, didn't know what I was doing. I was like, oh, that looks good. So literally ended up pretty much launching what I came now to know as the same as what others would launch after me. So I was the first one with that product on Amazon UK, but I didn't have that moat for long. Wow. You know what I mean? The first month on that, I did £15,000 revenue at about a 30% profit margin. So I was like, look, I'm onto something here. This is good. I like this because I don't have to run around to all these shops wasting petrol and doing this. There's no other people on my listing. I run ads, but I've got my hand around them. The cost per click on the ad side, we'll get into that a bit later, isn't too bad. So I was like, look, I'm onto something good here. And literally my bubble was burst about, I would say, 2 months in. When I was selling that product for around, I think it was like $29.99, I was buying it for like £5. selling for $29.99, which was great. £5 landed after all shipping and everything. All good.
Yeah.
And then Chinese copycat comes in at $14.99. And I was like, oh, gosh. And I had a 1,500 units at that point as well. So I was like, oh, bloody hell.
Man, that's harsh. That's harsh. But yeah, that is, I mean, mate, we had a baby March 2020. So slap bang during COVID time. And those are the only things that anyone ever wants to use. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, they were going to hotcakes.
I bet.
Chinese came in and brought me back to reality.
And I suppose then as well, shipping fees would have been a lot cheaper back in those days as well, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You mean to get it from China to the UK?
Yeah.
Much cheaper. Yeah, shipping fees are through the roof now, especially to the UK, because if you're shipping by sea to the UK, you're looking at about 60 days all in. Whereas to the US, like I've had in my business and some of the students as well, we've got they get products in like 21 days. I think it's been the quickest.
Wow, that's
and that's slow sea shipping, because if you think about it, like US to China is the other way around, so it's just easier.
Yeah, they go across the date line, didn't they? So yeah,
that's it. Yeah.
Interesting. I love it. So to what you then just decided, take two steps back to go three steps forward and learn it properly.
Basically, yeah. So I was like, look, that first product, I think I ended up losing all in, even though I sold it, I put somewhat around break even. But once you looked at kind of like Chinese came in and I had to drop it a bit more, I think I ended up selling the last units for $9.99. So I made a loss. I think I lost a couple of grand on that. And at that point, I was like, look, okay, I like this private label business model. I didn't get it right the first time, but I kind of like how things are going here. It's very hands-off. Like, you know, I don't see or touch any of the products. It's great. I think, you know, there's some longevity in this. So that's when I took a step back and I really thought about, you know, what my brand's going to look like. Because another thing with that product is I just launched under some brand. I just like Googled and chucked some words together and created a brand. I didn't really have a real brand. It was just kind of like, I'm selling a product and this is my name.
Yeah.
So I thought about my brand. I started thinking about like my customer archetype and like what kind of people are buying my products. Now I started thinking about, okay, how can I improve it based on what is already in the market? And I use websites like Kickfu, for example, where you can do polls on, you know, your product versus another product. And then you can get real feedback from actual Amazon customers. So I did all that, did a lot of research, and I basically came up with a pretty good thesis on my next product. So I actually launched two products next at once, and those fared a lot better. And I actually still sell them today.
Wow.
So that's like, what, 4 or 5 years later.
That's really good. So how did you learn?
So I basically learned from YouTube. I learned from YouTube, because that's the other thing with like the UK as well. It's like, UK, I see more as like the people doing arbitrage, people doing wholesale. There's not that many UK private label guys.
No.
And the UK private label guys there are, they tend to sell in the US, which was another barrier. You know, I constantly talk about these barriers that are like, I want to do that, but I'm kind of scared. That was another barrier that now I've conquered, which was, I didn't think you could sell in the US, or I just didn't get the logistics around it. Now I do primarily sell in the US. So that was a barrier that I conquered. But at the time, look, I'm thinking UK, I want to sell in the UK. There's no one out there that I know from communities, from Twitter or Instagram, that are selling private label in the UK at that time. So again, basically learning is all from the Americans.
Mm, I bet. I bet proportionately, it still hasn't changed that much either, has it?
Yeah. I mean, I produce content obviously on private label, primarily thinking US. I actually launched a product with my dad about 4 months ago now in the UK. So I'm still launching products in the UK, but yeah, content wise, I mean, I could probably think of like maybe two people that I've seen just through TikTok or YouTube that are private label in the UK.
Wow, that's incredible, isn't it? There does seem to be still just that big stigma about private label. People aren't willing to take the punt, and they seem to think it's some wizardry in finding products and stuff like that. It's just a new process, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah. It's different from what you think. So if you think about like when you're doing arbitrage or online arbitrage, there's, from my experience, like I've never got too deep into like the analyzing keeper and stuff. I kind of touched the surface.
Yeah.
Probably why I wasn't, and it didn't end up doing that great from it, to be honest, in the end. But I think with private label, it's just a completely different research process. Like you really are engineering from the ground up. So you're finding a product that, you know, you like the look of, the numbers look good. But then once you get the kind of the quantitative side out of the way, you really got to get into the qualitative side, which is like really the branding, the functionality, the design. And that's just it's a different skill set. You're not thinking about that when you're doing arbitrage. You're not looking at a product and saying, that's got 8,000 reviews, I'm not going to launch it, because, you know, you're arbitrage, you're pigging on the back of the listing. You don't care about that. If anything, that's better.
Mm.
Whereas when you're doing private label, you know, you look at the reviews, you might think, hey, you know, that's a little bit saturated. If I launch in that space, you know, are people going to choose me with 5 reviews, or that guy's got 8,000? You know, it's just a lot more to consider. But on the whole of it, if you kind of track back, you know, you're creating, you know, you're not piggybacking on a listing that might get tanked in 3 months. You're creating something that can last for years.
Yeah, exactly right. I know one of the stumbling blocks I had was, how can I make this product better than everything else on the market from a creative point of view, a design point of view, an aesthetic point of view?
Yeah.
ChatGPT helped. Of course it did.
Yeah.
What can I do to product X to make it look even better? You know, what can I do to these nail clippers? You know, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
but it's that creativity that would stand you out to a degree, isn't it?
That's it. It's creativity. Like I'm not the most, I always say, like, I'm not the most creative person. I'm more of a numbers guy. But there are things that I leverage to help me massively when it comes to like developing a private label product. And I mentioned one before, which is pickfu.com. It's a great website where you can basically pitch your image against some of your big competitors. And let's say you had a differentiation point that you were like, look, I want to create this and bundle it with another product that's frequently bought with the main product. And you were like, I don't know if people like it. It might be a bit too far-fetched. Before you go ahead and spend thousands of dollars on like X amount of units, you can put it on Pickfu and say, look, guys, I want to pay $50 for 50 responses, $1 a response. You select the demographic. So if it's tailored, if it's a supplement tailored at women between 18 and 35, you can absolutely choose that before you go ahead and do it. But there you're going to get real feedback from real people.
Right, that first half's in the bag. I told you he was a blinder, wasn't he? That Scotland story, it's lived in my brain ever since. And if you're wondering how some people make it quicker than others, that level of hustle, that obsessive amount of action that he knew he needed to take. He said he's got an obsessive personality. I don't care. It takes a mindset, a level of determination that is unparalleled to say, right, I don't care if you're out of stock in England. I'm going to fly to Scotland to pack a label. No, he didn't even pack a label maker with him, did he? He just packed his brown tape. And he went to the post office and he went to the supermarket. It's just ridiculous. That's why that guy's successful. And you put a mind like that into any business model and he's going to make it good. He is going to make it good. That's the beauty with Amazon, and it's the beauty with TikTok as well. If you're determined to make it work, you will make it work. It might take you longer, but it depends on your level of action. And I've said this before, you see people in this game, you meet them in this game. And where someone might scale something from 1 to 50, there'll be that one person that scales it from 1 to 700,000. And I'm in awe of these people. Because I'm thinking, is there a conscious boundary, a social boundary that I'm walking up to and tentative around, when in actual fact I should smash it down? Don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Because in someone else's mind, I'm an action taker. But then I see people like Ryan, and I see other people that I work closely with, and I'm thinking, Jesus, I'm not going far enough. I love it. So what we'll do, we'll leave it there. We'll come back next week, and then we'll see what else we've got to say. We've got some great shows coming down the line. Off the back of the event, we've got all sorts of TikTok affiliates. We've got a Ron Reed show coming up on his own. We've also got a collective Ron, Gus, Jen, and Chris show coming up. And everything in between. We're kicking on. Have a lovely week, everybody. Take care. Ta-da.